December of last year, we were let go, all the employees. I managed to recover mentally. I said, okay, I mean, I love the project. I love Rust. I want to keep working on this project. So these two passions kept me working on the tools. And that's when we resumed releases, new features, and new patches. Now Biome is actually a good formatter and a good linter. They are really fast.
Hey, before we get started with this week's episode, we'd like to announce that we have started a newsletter. If you head over to mail.devtools.fm, you can subscribe. Justin will be running the newsletter, and he'll be curating a set of interesting links about DevTools news that happened throughout the week. Each newsletter will also contain a breakdown of the episode that we released that week, along with some of our post-show notes. So if you're interested, we'd love for you to join us. Hello, welcome to the DevTools FM podcast. This is a podcast about developer tools and the people who make them. I'm Andrew, and this is my co-host, Justin.
Hey, everyone. We're really excited to have Eman Stapa on with us today. So Eman is the maintainer of Biome. So if you haven't caught up with the news of Biome, so Biome is a sort of continuation of the Rome project. We're really happy to talk more about that. But before we get started, Eman, do you want to tell our listeners a little bit more about yourself?
Hey, everyone. Sure. So I am Emanuele, Emma as a short version. Even my family doesn't call me with my full name. It's too long. So it's completely fine. I present myself as Emma. And I'm a developer tools developer. I have more than 10 years of experience. I started as a PHP developer. And then shifted on front-end for many years. And in the last few years, working as a dev tools. And I like video games a lot. So I have a Switch and a PS4 and now PS5. Currently playing Sea of Stars.
Awesome. So we're here to talk about Biome, but we can't talk about Biome with talking about Rome a little bit. So could you tell us what Rome is and what the initial goals of the project were?
Yeah, so Rome was or is, it's a bit of a weird, but let's call it the present. So Rome is was born as a 360 tool chain that aims to essentially cover the majority of all the tools that we have in the front-end development all in one tool. So you use just one CLI, one LSP, and the intention is to actually give you all that was needed for formatting, linting, bundling, documentation generation, so everything. It's quite a goal, but also that's one of the reasons why I joined this tool at the very beginning, and that's why I keep working on it. That's what it's Rome, but it's now Biome.
Yeah, it's such an ambitious project, but I mean, it really much needed because we have so many different tools and written in different languages that are all building their own ASTs and doing all these transformations. And we end up just reparsing code again and again and again and transforming in different ways for different tools. So it's always seemed like a really good opportunity, but like you're saying, very ambitious because, you know, each one of the really popular tools, like linter tools or formatter tools or whatever, had large contributor bases or whatever. So it's a challenge. When you first got involved with Rome, was there any particular technical angle? Was it I'm really interested in linters or formatters or is it just the whole package overall that sort of really sold you on it?
Initially, I was actually attracted by parsing and compiling. So that's because essentially it's something that as a product developer, which I was, you can do. Okay, so it becomes a passion. And as a passion, you cultivate this one in your spare time. And Rome at that time was new. I did have a lot of contributors. So I thought it was the right place to cultivate this passion, study, compiler, working on it, and that's where. And the linter is actually a really good place. It's part of the compiler, but at the same time, you don't need to care about infrastructure and whatnot. You just build your own rule, emit a nastic, a possible fix, and you're happy. So, and that's why I started. And then also the CLI. I built a lot of CLIs in the past, also pet projects or not. I was actually a member of the Webpack CLI a few years ago. And that's where my passion about building a terminal tool was born. And this Rome CLI was really, really good, especially colors, diagnostics. Diagnostics were like, wow, that's amazing. That's something that you don't see every day in a CLI. So that was the second reason why I joined that project.
Yeah, it's funny how like lots of front-end developers end up also creating CLIs, but really it's just like a CLI for like your tool, or it's a front-end for your tool. So it kind of makes sense. We're still putting boxes on pages. We're still modifying the colors of things. So I want to dig into like Rome is a very ambitious project. Like you're trying to create a bundler, a linter, a formatter, X, Y, Z, lots of different things. So like right now we live in a world where all of those are separately maintained tools by separate teams. What makes it so that this project is able to make all those different tools?
That's a big question, like the big question for a tool like this. And I don't have a clear answer, but you know, I'm trying to make the other people understand why choosing such a tool could make a difference for your project or your product. And like, there's also a lot of technical details around it, but also like the fact that you're a product developer and you want to set up, you know, the CI tests, then you have, you know, linters, all these tools. How long does it take? I mean, I did that, and it takes a lot of time. It's really time consuming. You can't spend time working on the product because you're actually focused on setting it up, and it takes a lot of time. Like, just installing Prettier with ESLint. It's not just a clear installation, but you have to run a bunch of commands, install other plugins or configuration in order to make them happy, you know? So sure, there are like templates, but why are there templates? Because of this. So, you know, that. So the community is actually investing a lot of time on these tools around tools, all right? Instead, with Rome, you just don't need it. With Biome, sorry. You can do an NPX Biome format folder, and you're fine. Or also the check. You just do check, which does formatting and linting at the same time. So I think it's kind of rewarding, you having a tool that works out of the box without spending too much time to configure it, or configure it just doing an init, or you know, and you have everything in one single file, you know, so you don't need to go around searching different configuration files, try to the right combination. So if you have just one tool with one config, well, that's neat.
Yeah, that's huge. I mean, the ecosystem in general, I feel like, has seen an explosion of config files. So it's like you dive into a new project and there's like 10 config files. And that can be pretty intimidating for beginners. Also like this, just like, if you have this rich ecosystem of tooling for like parsing and AST transformations and everything, then like building new tools on top of that is hopefully a little bit easier. So it's the promise is there, and it's really exciting. And I think tools like Dino and Bun who are showing that, hey, we can provide you a tool with like all these other tools just kind of built in, shows like some real powerful value for just like a nice bundle of tooling like this. Sort of before we go further with this, I think it's good to talk about the history.
We'd like to thank Raycast for sponsoring our podcast. Raycast is an app for a Mac that's like Spotlight, but actually useful. Besides just doing all the normal stuff like quickly opening files, URLs, or apps, it provides cool things like a clipboard history manager, window management. You can even manage your calendar entirely from Raycast. And as a developer, one of the really cool things is that its extension API is super easy to use. If you've ever used React before, it looks just the same. You should also check out Raycast Pro. With Raycast Pro, you can take advantage of Raycast AI. You can do a whole bunch of cool things with Raycast AI, but I can't stress enough how much your workflow will change if you have AI chat just one keystroke away. I use it in my podcast editing workflow. I use it to code. I use it to Google things now. Along with that, Raycast Pro gives you access to their Cloud Sync feature, so your settings will sync across all of your devices. To learn more, you can visit raycast.com, or you can go listen to episode 38, where we talked to the CEO, Thomas, about the product, why they built it, and what they plan to do with it.
So the project was Roam, and now it's Biome. Roam, there was actually a company around that. So could you give us a little bit of the history and sort of how we ended up where we're at now?
Yeah, sure. So I think like a couple of years ago, Sebastian noticed a lot of interest in this kind of tool when it was like announced as an open source project. At that time, the project was still written in TypeScript. I think he ran like a funding campaign, and after that, he noticed like a lot of interest from people, and he used this funding campaign to investors to attract and VC funding, and that's when the company was born. So, and I mean, I was like, I'm gonna do it. Like, from, you know, it's a startup. You never know how it goes. But we're in an industry at that time where there was a lot of jobs. So, if it doesn't go very well, I can find another job in a couple of months, and the salary is good. I had savings, so. I mean, if I don't do it now, when should I do it? So I joined as one of the first two employees of the company, and it was great. I mean, eventually we decided to rewrite the tool in Rust. So from one point of view, it was like a step back, but it was needed. The tool at that time, it had a lot of stuff, but it was suffering from performance, so it wasn't that great. And Rust seemed the right choice. It's a really strictly typed, so it's memory safe. It offers a lot of goodies, and like as a beginner, yeah, it can be steep learning curve, but it has Rust offers a lot of primitives. So you can do a lot of high-level stuff, but also low-level stuff. So as a really a good range. So it's a welcoming language. So yeah, a step back, but in a year, we managed to actually write a JavaScript parser and a formatter. And mind that the formatter went through three rewrites. So it took a lot of time, a lot of brains, a lot of energies, but eventually we landed a really great infrastructure, which is actually also the same infrastructure that pumps RAF, which is another Rust project, a linter and a formatter for Python projects. So it's another ecosystem. It's in Rust and it uses the same engine. So it works very well. So after a couple of years, we were growing great, but functionally we were let go. So there was no more money, apparently. I don't have details around it. So not even sure if the company is still like alive. So I'm not in touch with Sebastian anymore. So the only details that I have is at December of last year, we were let go, all the employees. So that's when the developments stopped. But, you know, after a small break, you know. It was around the holidays, so I managed to recover mentally, and I said, okay, I mean, I love the project. I love Rust. I mean, I want to keep writing Rust. I want to keep working on this project. So these two passions kept me working on the tools. And that's when we resumed releases, new features, and new patches. And that's also when we also had the linter. And now Biome is actually a good formatter and a good linter. They are really fast. So that's essentially the story behind ROM.
Cool. Yeah. I mean, startup life is hard. So, you know, definitely, you know, it sucks to see any company like that fail. I think dev tooling companies in general are really hard too, because it's like, you know, we talked to Charlie Marsh about this and who's working on Ruff, and it's just a hard thing. It's like, sometimes it's easy to get money, but like making a sustainable business is hard. You've sort of forked Rome now into Biome. Who's helping maintain that now? Is it like some of the other original people that were working on it too? Is it just you? Like, what is the sort of stewardship of the project look like?
So I'm the only original people, like since the beginning. So all the ex employees take their own paths, so they are not that much involved into the project. But in the meantime, when Rome was a company, there were third party contributors with the same passion, you know, working on compilers, new languages such as Rust, so working on linters. So we managed to have a few people, and I publicly asked them if they wanted to continue after their own company went under, if they could keep helping me. And they said yes. So now essentially they are the core team. So we are like five people. We hope to flesh out the governance, so more people will come, fortunately. So it's just five volunteers that like the ecosystem, the small community that we have. So that's it.
So is the goal of the project still the same? Do you still want to conquer all the other dev tools in the space?
I don't think so. Like in my mind, yeah, I still want to achieve that. But you know, we don't have the same empower we had before. Mm-hmm. We don't have so many contributions, because the combination of like language and the end users, they are finding a combination like that. It's really difficult. So at the moment, we want to focus our energies on formatter, linter, and CLI. So trying to flesh out more roles, having a better infrastructure for the linter to provide even more sophisticated roles. We want to slowly focus on parsing more languages. So we recently started CSS parsing and also HTML, and this would unlock more languages. So we want to focus on the tools that we have at the moment, because they are stable, they work quite well. We have a lot of good documentation. So if we push on those, hopefully we're going to have also more contributors. But in the meantime, under the hood, slowly, I also want to start like compilation. So transformation that I created something for TypeScript. It's really, really small, you know, just transforming an enum into a JavaScript function. So as a foundation of the compiler. But yeah, like I don't see like a test runner, for example, you know, but yeah, I would see like a compiler. But you know, that part of the industry is quite cluttered. There are really like a lot of competitors. We have Vite, which is uses a roll-up and is doing great. We have SWC. Well, it's not a bundler, but it's also a tool used by. We have TurboRepo, for example. We have Ace Build. So there's a lot of competition. So not sure we are ready to go there.
Yeah. But I think if you get like a capable linter that can do like its own fixes, like having like a Babel layer just like right above that seems like a pretty easy hop. But I do agree with you, like going full bundling is like that there's a lot of competitors in that space, and it is a far, far more complicated thing to do. But like for lightweight code transformations, the field right now, like Babel set a great precedent of like making it really easy to write code transformations and include them in my project. And like, if you go like the full TypeScript route nowadays, like there is no equivalent for TypeScript. So like those types of code transformations are kind of becoming a second class citizen. So in Rome, like how are the plugins written? Are there plugins? Can I make my own lint rules, my own transforms?
No plugins yet.
Oh.
Like we are not plugins yet. So, like there are like some domains that they say like, are we plugins yet or are we web yet? So, in our case, we are not plugins yet. So that's so for people that are listening, if you want to switch from ESLint and you have custom rules, don't do that yet. So we are not there yet. Use the tools that you have. And you'll be happy. But we are talking about it. Like we are trying to not understand how can we write custom rules. So we are evaluating different approaches like DSL or maybe just Rust or yeah, maybe JavaScript, but like, no, we'll see. Or even like WASM, so WebAssembly. So yeah, you write in Rust, but then it's a WebAssembly, which is an approach that's used by dprint. But still, you will have to learn a bit of Rust. So yeah, we could use a JavaScript, but there's also the fact that maybe using JavaScript could like slow down the tool. So it's a choice that we have to evaluate. We have to evaluate all the pros and cons. We need to understand what the users want. Do you want a fast tool or do you want a slow tool, but you want to write JavaScript files? So it's a hard thing to decide, but yeah, it's now in our radars, but I don't see it happening like in the next few months.
Yeah, the plugin question is really hard when you have native code because you have to deal with, you know, if it's just like direct, if they're like writing more Rust, then you have to figure out like, what is the interop story or like, you know, do we have to, you know, write some like shared object or something? Or yeah, performance implications of like, oh, now we have to like pass off all these strings or like the AST nodes to like this different language, and that transformation layer can be pretty slow. So it is a really hard problem. I think we had an episode where we talked to the Dlibso folks behind Xdism, which seems like it could be a really cool option for like WASM plugins and stuff. But I'm really interested to see what y'all do with this because it's something that I want to see more experimentation with like these native. I mean, because we're getting more and more native tooling in the ecosystem, right? And plugins are also have been incredibly important for us. And it's like, you know, the plugins don't necessarily have to be written in the same thing, but there is definitely performance trade-offs. So I'm really interested to see what y'all come up with there.
Yeah, the Xtism route seems really, really interesting to me. I wonder what the performance implications are. For our listeners who may not know, Xtism is a tool that lets you create a plugin system, but the plugins are written in WASM. So it makes it really easy for you to like have a plugin that is in Rust or a plugin that's in Go or a plugin that's in JavaScript. It'd be interesting to see what the performance characteristics of that are, because like I know JavaScript is slow. We all know that. And JavaScript plugins will be slow, but like I still want to write them. Like I write one-off ESLint plugins all the time. And for me, like an ESLint replacement, which I see Rome kind of fitting the bill for, needs plugins in my opinion. So I'm very excited to see what you guys come up with if you do.
Or biome, as it were.
Sorry. I'll fix it all in post.
So just sort of like asking about some of the other features. So you have, so you said that you're probably not going to do a test runner right now, but you have, do you say you have an LSP language server plugin? Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, so we have a out-of-the-box LSP server, so which is quite convenient. We already know that there are like third-party editors that use that. So like there's a NeoVim plugin for Biome already. So there was for Rome, but there's already for Biome. So, and it's quite easy because like we have a CLI command, like a Biome LSP proxy, and essentially we spawn a server that does essentially functions as a proxy to our daemon, and the daemon essentially is going to work as LSP. And so it's quite easy to create editor plugins for that. Also our VS Code extension, which is maintained in our repository. Like the TypeScript code is just maybe 1,000 lines of code, even less. So we don't need to do much. We just need to register it and resolve the binary, and that's it. So there are also some Elix plugins. So, and we are also working, so we have a third-party contributor that is working on a plugin for IntelliJ, so which is something that a lot of people have asked so far. So having it is going to be really a huge boost. I'm looking forward to it because I'm an IntelliJ user. So I use WebStorm and Scylion daily. So having it is going to be great. And yeah, so we have an LSP that uses this crate called Tower LSP, which was actually written by one of the guys of Dino. So, and it was great. Like, it's really easy to use it. It uses async Rust, which is quietly easy to pick up, and it was quite like easy to use our architecture. So we architected the code in a way where we can use it as LSP and as a CLI, which is not that easy sometimes because you have to have a right balance between performance and caching, you know.
So you mentioned the daemon. So I don't use many daemons on my machine right now, or maybe I do and I don't know. So like, what is it and what is it doing and how does it make like the performance of Biome better?
Yeah, so the daemon was like a concept that we had since like the first ROM. Essentially the idea is to have this long running process, okay, where you ping it to essentially get all the information that you need when you do operations such as formatting a code or analyze a piece of a snippet or anything, or also give me the code actions relative to this code, so anything around that. And it also, there was also the idea to use the daemon also for remote caching, okay? So you have this daemon that does, it could also run on some other's machine and you just connect it remotely and you can use the same cache used by this daemon. And that's where the concept of portable cache was born in Rome, which we don't have yet in Biome since we've done the write. But it was also like one of the things that we wanted to do, and portable caching and remote caching was also one of the things that we could use as a service for enterprise you know, big companies that work on virtual machines and touch and such, and big CIs. So at the moment, you use the daemon when essentially you run the LSP. So you use your VS Code extension. We have the LSP that essentially spawns the daemon, and there's a continuous back and forward every time there's a query from the LSP, like a formatting range or anything. So you go there, and in the daemon, we actually cache things like virtual files or like files when you do also CLI operations. We cache DST also. So if you have a file that hasn't changed, we don't need to reparse it. We take it from the cache, and things are quite fast because we don't reparse it. And that's the amazing thing, because if you need to format and link the same code, you just reuse the same cache and the same AST. You don't need to do any additional operations for run two tools at the same time.
That's awesome. I think one of the like subtle benefits of this is also you're skipping out on a lot of startup time costs if it's a persistent process, because like a lot of the tools that we have, they have to start fresh, you know, and reinitialize and do all the stuff like right away. And if you already have this thing churning in the background, then you know, just a little bit faster, which is great.
Yeah, like also the CLI at the moment, when you run it, it just spawns a workspace. It doesn't actually use the daemon, but we have an option where you can actually use it. So you use an option called use server, and if you have a daemon running, it will use that daemon. And it could be slower because essentially you have a server and you have to contact every single time, so it could be slower. But if you have multiple, if you need caching, things like that, or also the LSP, in the future it could be really useful. And yeah, you don't need to start up again the service on really big projects.
So I want to ask you a few questions about the AST. Recently, I was looking into ESLint, and I learned that the two most popular plugins are also probably the two slowest plugins. Those plugins are the TypeScript plugin and the import plugin. And they're both slow basically because of the same reason that ESLint is built on the principle that like we're linting one file. We don't really care about the other files, but those two plugins in particular have to care about all the other files. TypeScript has to know all the files to type check. The import plugin has to go check if the thing you're importing is importable. So does Biome have the concept of like multi-file lint rules, and is that built into it?
Not yet, but
okay.
Thinking about it, we've had discussion. I'm also like, there's another person that is building a really similar product to Biome, and is actually actually working on a crate to actually resolve node dependencies. So, and I think we're gonna aim to use that tool for us. So we don't need to do everything from scratch. Like we gotta do a really great partnership. We are in really good terms. His name is Boshan. He was actually, he started to actually work on this tool thanks to actually Rome and the Rome's mission. So I don't see why we shouldn't partner up and use his tools. He's doing a really great job, and it's gonna help us in that to actually support creating lint rules that are aware of other files, and we'll see how it goes, because these kind of operations, yeah, they are slow. But imagine like you have your ESLint plugins, they are not aware of each other. Like I don't think they share the same AST. So imagine Biome, yes, we do dependency resolution and whatnot, but then everything is well aware in the same daemon, in the same workspace. So I could see a lot of benefits once we will be able to flesh out this feature. Like Boshen is actually working on supporting the import plugin. Is like pushing it a lot. I see a lot of work, advancements, and yeah, I mean, I'm looking forward to use his work in SciBio.
Bushin's another like really awesome dev that we would love to talk to. Just admiring that work from afar, and there's a lot of really interesting stuff happening in that space too. So,
yeah. So, a little bit more about the AST. Like currently, basically all the tools are built on like packages that do the AST parsing for you. Does Rome provide a package where I can build my own tools on top of the Rome AST?
Package to build? Not that I'm aware of. Although, you know, we have our playground. Our playground actually does parsing, and thing is, it doesn't emit like JavaScript bindings, but like you can actually, we were thinking actually, having a way to actually export this AST as a JSON and then do whatever you want with that. I think we have a time to implement. It was really an experimental thing. Thing is, like Biome doesn't work with an AST. I'm not sure if you know it, but Biome is actually works with a CST. So AST stands for Abstract Syntax Tree. CST stands for Concrete Syntax Tree. So the difference is that the CST saves all the information of your code, also comments, white spaces, and new lines. This is an information that usually you lose when you create your AST. So like you have your AST Explorer, you go there with Babel, you see your AST, which is fine, you have everything, but you don't know where are the comments, you don't know where are the new lines, you have to essentially compute them. So you have your row and location, and then you have to do some computation in order to resolve them. Biome actually uses a CST because the idea is we want to support DLSP. And if you don't know it, the parsers that work in the IDEs and editors most of the times use a CST, so a concrete parsing phase, because they also need to be aware of all the spaces and comments, especially when they need to provide auto-completion or snippets or anything that has to manipulate your file. And also, other than that, Biome's parser is a recoverable parser. So you will never see Biome essentially breaking because there's an invalid syntax. Biome's parser is able to detect invalid syntax, continue the parsing until it recognizes a token or something that resembles, a body of a function and resumes the correct parsing, or there's an end of file. And at that point, what we do, we create a node that we call it Bogus. We call it Bogus node, which concept we borrowed from the .NET parser, Roslyn. Roslyn has been like one of our source of truth and inspirations. We took a lot of nomenclature and concepts, and one of that is the Bogus node. So if you go to our playground and you write invalid code, you actually will see that the parser tries to do its best to understand what you wrote, but if it doesn't understand it, you just have a Bogus node. So essentially, with this, you can do a lot of incredible stuff. Like you can format code that is actually broken. Like we have an option that says format with errors. So if you have a broken code, you can actually able to format the healthy parts of the code. And the same goes for our linter. So if you have some code that is partially broken, like whatever, and so the part of the code that is healthy and contains some invalid code in terms of linting rules, you will see the red squiggle on your IDE saying that, okay, this is an invalid thing for that rule, but the rest of the code that is broken will stay there. So it's also something that we are proud of. We can do things that other tools can't.
Yeah, that's a really huge feature. So this is like, you know, you have a single lint error and like sometimes, or a single parse error or whatever, and it's just like you get nothing else for the rest of the file. That's like everything is like broken. But with this, you can maybe see like multiple errors at one time or whatever. And that is really powerful, especially for feedback loops, because sometimes it's like the first error in the file is not the thing that you want to fix right away, right? It's just like there are errors down below that are actually like more important. And so, yeah, I definitely appreciate that, because I relate this to like, it feels very much like form validation. Some people, like the first invalid entry in a form is like the error, and you don't see the other errors in the form. And I'm just like, ah, this is so frustrating. So he's like, fix one and go fix another. So this is like kind of the equivalent there of like, you know, giving you all the errors all in one. That's really awesome.
Yeah, I've never heard I don't think I've ever heard the term concrete syntax tree, but I've definitely encountered the problems with the abstract syntax tree. I wrote a custom rule that just enforces that if you have a function and you put a comment above it, that should be a JS doc comment. And like, to my surprise, that was actually hard to write in ESLint because, as you said, the abstract syntax tree doesn't hold any information about comments since that's not like part of the language. So I had to like literally like use the source code and like regexes to like see is this actually a comment before this line. So that's really interesting that you can solve that with a slightly different data structure.
Do you, out of curiosity, so CSTs are definitely required for, you know, things like linters, for example, or an LSP, but definitely there are some tools that are not going to need all that extra granular information. And this is one of the things that I was thinking about as a challenge for building Biome is that, you know, different tools need sort of different information in the AST or CST or like different granularities. Do you actually always pass around the CST nodes, even if it's like extra information, or are there times when you actually simplify it down to an AST for, you know, I'm not sure if any of the tools you're working on right now need like the less thing. But I mean, an example here of like why you'd want to do that is just there's less nodes to walk, right? So it's like it's faster to traverse an AST than it is a CST.
Yeah. So at the moment, we always pass all the information. So linter and formatter get the same AST, like CST, but essentially it's a eventually also allows you to get all the, we call it trivia. So trivia are essentially all this information that are not part of the code. So spaces, comments, new lines, and etc. But yeah, I mean, you're right. Like, for example, maybe a bundler. Yeah, there are maybe tools that don't need it, and sure, we will need to actually address that. Like a minifier, for example. A minifier won't need to have this kind of information. Maybe some edge cases for, I don't know, some bundling and tooling. But yeah, and that's an operation that we haven't done yet, which is called like a syntax lowering, essentially dropping all the information that we don't need. And that's something that I thought about it. But so far, we have had a use case, and I'm sure that once we'll walk the path where we will need that, I'm sure that something that we have to write, and it's going to be fun and a lot of time consuming. But yeah, like this CST, it seems magical, but like it has a lot of cons. Like working with trivias is actually quite painful, especially when you have lint rules that need to provide a code fix, and you want to maintain like spaces. You want to, you know, you are rewriting some code. You want to keep the comment, and attach the comment to the new node. So it's not always easy. Actually, it's quite painful. So sometimes we struggle to find the right balance. Sometimes we are like, let's just drop the comment, you know, who cares? But you know, sometimes they're actually important because they may be JS docs. So we have, there are like some type information you needed to the user. But most of the times, those code actions, we deem them like unsafe. So we, so if the user needs to opt in order to have them. So, but yeah, it's a struggle. So even though you have a lot of information, these information come with a price.
So recently, new JavaScript runtimes have been the hotness. Does Biom only work in Node, or does it support new runtimes like Dino and Bun?
I think it works also with Bun. Actually, I'm actually sure that it works also with Bun. We have some person in the community that asked, and they actually used it. They also asked to have a binary with the Bun shebang. But like I'm no expert with Bun, so I don't know how to do that. But like, if there's someone there that is able to help us, they're more than welcome to like launch a PR or jump on a Discord discussion, and we will have it. But it seems like if you do Bun run and then you write the Biom command, it seems to be working. That's what I saw on our Discord server. On Dino, I'm not even sure about that. Don't have an answer. But I wish to have the support for Dino, to be honest.
So maybe last thing about Biom, of maybe something we haven't talked about or something that we have talked about, what's your favorite thing right now in Biom, or favorite thing to work on, or whatever?
Oh, I really like the CLI, maybe because it's essentially... my baby. I wrote most of it. I rewrote most of it, and also all the configuration. I'm essentially the creator since the beginning of the configuration, all the new stuff that we create, and the RFC. We have also a bunch of RFCs to improve it. So I really like how the configuration is coming up, and all additional features that we we're going to have in the next months in the configuration. So there are a lot of ideas, a lot of suggestions from the community. It's going to help us to make the tool more fine-grained, especially now that we are able to parse and handle multiple files, such as JSON files and JavaScript files, and soon also CSS files. If we have a fine-grained, really like a customizable configuration, I think the user would be happy.
For the CLI, did you build like a bunch of your own packages to build the CLI, or did you use like Rust crates?
I actually used the Rust crates. There are a bunch of the ecosystem. I chose one. It's not that well known. I studied it and I really liked it. It's called the BPuff. I also contributed back to the package. Now it's able to generate markdown a markdown document with the documentation of the CLI. So if you go in our website, you go to the CLI reference, all that markdown document is actually auto-generated by this crate using the Rust documentation comments, so we get a lot of for free, and yeah, it was really great working with this CLI tool. Works really well, and it's quite light as opposed to Clap, which is essentially the de facto CLI library in the Rust ecosystem. A lot of tools use Clap, for example, Dino uses Clap. But it gives a lot of features that we don't need at the moment. So I opted for BPuff, and I'm quite happy. Like also Boshan, he saw my work. He asked me if I'm happy with that. I'm happy. So also the Oxlint CLI uses BPUF as a CLI argument parsing.
Yeah, it's awesome that the Rust community is so much like the JavaScript community with how like crates and NPM are managed. Just like being able to use and collaborate on all this like underlying software is so cool.
Yeah,
totally. Before we move to tooltips, we always like to ask a question about the future. So you've, you know, the fork of Biome is not too old now, but, you know, I'm sure you have plans for the future. So what's next? What's next for Biome?
Yeah, so in the short term, I'm going to have a governance. So a way, you know, to reward the user and have it. Like some kind of bureaucracy, you know, so users are safe. They know how things work. You know, it's not everything up in the air. So we want to have something that is well written. So you can become also a core contributor in the future and join us with this adventure. And so I essentially in the short term, I want to make like a better community, make it more stable. Community is also make a great thing. Quite important for us. And we're going to try to have more first code issues, help users. So that's the short term. Also having an open collective, so trying to get some sponsorship or some donations. That's another thing that we want to have in the short term. Medium term, so, well, as I mentioned, we want to try to do the transformations. So having a way to transform your code. So without maybe using Babel or TypeScript to transform your code. So it's going to be fast. It's going to be challenging because, you know, if you use a TypeScript, you also have the DTS files. So it's something that we want to try to support for the users. And, well, long term, I'm hoping for I don't know, to be honest. I haven't thought about that far. There are a lot of things, you know, that you want to do. So you want to do this, do that, and that. It's quite difficult to focus. But yeah, so I want to say bundler, but it's, I think, as I said, it's too much. Maybe a minifier, you know, that's it.
Yeah, hopefully more contributors come. I definitely looked at contributing at the start, but then I got scared away by Rust.
Yeah, I understand the fear.
I think Rust is not as bad. You know, it takes a little while to learn, but like once you sort of get comfortable with it, it's really not bad.
Yeah. Well, I was looking at writing like a lint rule and like trying to contribute that, and that just seemed like, oh God, I got to learn so much just to contribute a lint rule. With that, let's transition to tooltips. So my first tooltip is something that literally came up on my feed not 2 hours ago. This is V0 from Vercel. And what it is an LLM that you can interact with to generate front-end designs. So they have a bunch of examples here from like different employees at Vercel going like, add a border to this thing or give me a settings UI. And it comes up with something that is passable and good for a V0, just like the name is, V0.dev. I'm both excited and scared to see my job getting easier and going away all at the same time. So interested to see where this goes for sure. And Vercel's just like overall almost pivot into like supporting people making AI things is very interesting to me. It's not something I would have put in my 2023 bingo card.
I feel like it's like in part really individually driven. I don't know if it's like an overall strategy or something, but you know, Jared Palmer, I think, had worked pretty heavily on this functionality. So it is interesting just to see what things they're targeting and how they're growing their business. Because I think hosting, there's always like a limited window there and they have to find some other business opportunities too. But yeah, it's cool and scary. I would like to see the code that it generates. I wonder what it's like.
Yeah, probably nothing too interactive. Okay, next up we have SQL Sync.
So listeners of the podcast may know, I love SQLite and I love local first apps. I'm always on the lookout for like new syncing capabilities and new tools for this. So SQL Sync is a library that basically does that. You can sort of write these SQL queries right to a database, and it syncs it remotely. One of the things that I really love is they have a plugin for Cloudflare's SQLite solution. So you could have like local data that you're storing, and that could get synced to Cloudflare. I don't know, really interesting library. It is relatively young, so definitely check it out. I don't know, so it's a something to keep an eye on for sure. I'm really, really loving the proliferation of tools in this space, because I want to get to the point where people are more comfortable just building apps that store data locally and offer syncing solutions, because I feel like this is the sort of best future for people like owning their data and like having a better understanding of like what things are stored or whatever, and hopefully building like apps, like multiple apps that can use the same data source, which would be like a really cool feature.
There's a cool little demo they have here where it like shows everything happening live, and I can change the queries happening. So cool.
Yeah, you can open another tab and like there's a checkbox of status connected, and like you can disconnect it and you know, do some stuff and then reconnect it and see it all sync between the tabs.
That's cool.
Yeah.
Well done. Okay, next up we have Rust Rover.
So, not sure if you are into IntelliJ IDEs, but like if you do, you know that if you wanted to use Rust, you had to download the official plugin. But now they just released the standalone IDE for Rust only. I mean, I think this is quite huge, because like it's like acknowledging that Rust is actually quite used. There's a demand. There are essentially a lot of people in the enterprise and the business that are actually using Rust for their products. So the fact that we have a dedicated IDE, it's like confirming that Rust is gonna be here to stay. So yeah, let's see how it goes. I think it's like in preview, so. I tried it last night a bit, and works seamlessly like it was with a plugin. So I hope to see more of it.
Yeah, I'm surprised that there wasn't a Rust IDE before this. Maybe just Rust people love using Vim, and that's all they needed up until now.
Like, the plugin works with all the IDEs, like PHP, WebStorm, or any IDE and of IntelliJ. But if you want to do debugging, so you want to have your breakpoints and whatnot, only CLion is the one that fits the bill. But now you have a dedicated IDE, so you can do all the debugging that you want without problems.
That's cool.
Yeah, that's really awesome.
Okay, my last tool tip is one that came up on my feed, and it's a nice little terminal file manager called Yazi. It has this nice TUI, it shows images, it has a bunch of cool features like batch renaming and stuff like that. So if you've been looking for a way to manage files through your CLI that isn't just the normal Unix commands, this might be a fun way to do it. I haven't reached this level of geekery yet, but I hope to one day.
That's nice.
Yeah, it looks like a lot of work went into this. And of course, built on Rust.
I could see that being really great for like a media server that you like SSH into or something. That would be awesome.
It would be. Okay, last up we have Langsmith. Yeah, Langsmith Hub.
Well, so this is LangChain. This is their hub of resources. So going back to the AI topic a little bit, for those of you who haven't heard of LangChain before, LangChain is a method of like building these sort of AI agents where each one has like a different task and they can like call out to APIs and stuff. So this is like giving LLMs access to the real world, you know, like reading emails or doing whatever. This LangChain hub is just a collection of a bunch of agents that people have written. to do various tasks. So it's sort of, they're providing this repository of like Lego building blocks of like building this, you know, really capable, I guess, API helpers or whatever, or AI helpers, API helpers, AI helpers that use APIs. Yeah. Anyway, I've really been interested in LangChain for a while. I think that there's this notion of building personalized virtual assistants that's very appealing to me. And it feels like that's closer and closer to being in reach, and having this sort of GitHub-like experience where people are sharing these agents that sort of take care of things for you is, I think, just really, really exciting. So definitely check this out. It's a cool resource.
Yeah, it's cool to see all these like hubs pop up for AI. Like Hugging Face is basically like GitHub for models. Very useful. And being able to just like see like how people are prompting the LLMs is super useful. And you can just like look at these and improve your own prompting. Okay, that wraps it up for tooltips. Thanks for coming on the podcast, Iman. This was very fun. Very excited about the project and to see where it goes in the future. And I wish you luck on it.
Thank you for having me and for inviting me. It was really fun talking about the project and about me. And yeah, break a leg.
Yeah, just to echo what Andrew said, really great having you on. I'm glad that you picked up the project again. I really thought that it was, there's so much potential there, and was sad to sort of see it like stop. So I'm glad that you picked it up. I hope that you're in a better place and you're more comfortable with it, and it's like really exciting and you're refreshed and everything. Cause I know, you know, experiences like that when, you know, you're involved in a tool and the company around it fails or something can be hard. So, you know, good on you for doing it. And yeah, just, you know, we love to see your work and we're excited for the future.